Welcome to the Real Life English Podcast, where we help dedicated English learners just like you cultivate the courage, the confidence, and the skills that you need to understand real life native English, to communicate clearly with people from all around the world, and to make your life an epic global adventure. Now, are you ready to go beyond the classroom and start living your English? Can I get an aw yeah?
In this week's podcast, we're talking all about the most common excuses and attitudes that prevent you from learning English. Whether you're a beginner, intermediate, or advanced learner, this is a great moment to check in with yourself and think about how you can be a better learner. And as always, if you head on over to our Instagram at reallife.english, you'll find some bonus obstacles there. So make sure you check that out as soon as you finish listening to this podcast.
Oh yeah, boys and girls, citizens of the world, this is Ethan from Real Life English, where we believe that listening to podcasts is a fun, natural, convenient, and...
the bee's knees.
...way to learn English. So download this podcast and listen to it while you're catching some waves, decorating your Christmas tree, or even...
doing your Christmas shopping.
Oh yeah, I'm joined here in the Cross Atlantic studio, as always, by the lovely Andrea. How's it going, Andrea?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
Doing great. And by the only man who's ever seen Santa Claus and lived to tell the tale, Justin Murray.
Oh yeah, what is up? Hey guys.
So Justin, do you want to let people in on what we're going to be talking about today? I think we gave a bunch of things about Christmas, but this podcast is not actually about Christmas. We're just awfully close to it. So it's on our mind.
Well, today's podcast, we're going to be talking about using an article I wrote a long time ago called 9 Reasons Why People Fail to Get Fluent. And just discussing some of the excuses that people give and also some of the real reasons that people give for not getting fluent. And also be talking about some of the solutions and the ways that people can succeed.
Mm-hmm. And if you're listening to this podcast, then you can head over to YouTube and you can actually watch us talking about this, and you'll feel a little bit like you're having a coffee or a cup of tea with the three of us and enjoying this conversation. And we'll also have down in the description below linked our show notes, so you can get a list of all of the vocabulary and expressions that we'll talk about today, as well as any resources. So that said, I think we can jump in to today's shout out, which is very special because it also includes the quote of the day, which this fan was nice enough to share with us something super inspiring. So we'll do those 2 for 1.
So today's shout out and quote comes from Evie from Italy, and she's titled it, "Aw yeah." Wanted to thank the whole Real Life English community for their hard and remarkable work that is really mind-blowing and out of this world by leaving them this eye-opener motivation speech made by Denzel Washington. Don't be afraid to go outside the box. Don't be afraid to fail big, to dream big. But remember, dreams without goals are just dreams. In order to achieve your goals, you must apply discipline and consistency every day. You have to work at it every day because hard work works. Working really hard is what successful people do. So continue to strive to take risks, because to achieve something you never had, you have to do something you never did. Hoping this can also inspire many students around the world, especially those who, like me, are scared to fail or make mistakes in English. But the thing is that if you don't fail, you are not even trying.
Hi, yeah, so that was a hell of a recommendation that one of our fans left us over on Apple Podcasts, which if you're listening to this, I highly recommend that you also head over to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you're listening, because then you can help a lot of other people, just like Evie, who says that if you don't fail, you're not even trying to learn English with us, to make lots of mistakes, and to take their English fluency to the next level.
And if you go and share a quote that really inspires you, like Evie did, then we'd be happy to read it and combine the shout out with the quote, just like today.
Awesome. So that said, I think that those wise words from Denzel Washington is a perfect point for us to jump into today's main topic. All right. So today we have several reasons that people commonly fail when they're learning English. Andrea, what's the first one?
So the first one is when people say, "I'm not good with languages." And I've heard this many times as well. And it is true that some people are better at learning languages than others, but it's not going to stop you from achieving your goals when learning a language, because some people are gifted, but other people just want it more and will work harder and will strive to achieve and could even do better than those that are gifted in a way.
What does gifted mean?
So if you're gifted, it means that you kind of have more of a natural ability at something. You maybe don't have to work as hard. You maybe pick things up a bit easier and it just comes more naturally to you.
You can also say to gift somebody something. So he gifted me that book, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I totally agree. I like felt this a lot when I was younger because my brother always had a knack for languages. He was like really good at Spanish, and we'd like just from taking classes in school, anytime we'd take a trip down to Mexico, which we did a lot when I was growing up, he would, you know, be speaking in the grocery store and just like always with the locals and stuff. And I always felt like in my language classes, I just like struggled so much with them and I wasn't inspired. But kind of through my own journey of like getting to have different experiences traveling and learning, I just became very passionate about learning languages. And now my brother he's forgotten most of his Spanish. And now I've learned 6 different languages to different levels and stuff just because of that passion and that drive. So I definitely would say that compared to my brother, I'm not as good with languages, but I think having kind of that passion, that drive, that fire underneath it, takes you so much further than just having that knack for being able to do something well.
Knack? Like knackered out?
Yeah. You feel knackered, right? But we say you have a knack for something is the same to say if you have a talent or a gift for something, right?
And that's spelled K-N-A-C-K, right?
Exactly.
And is knackered out, is that something that we use in American English, or is that just British?
Well, you said, I've never heard knackered out, but I've heard I'm knackered from Brits, right?
Yeah, we use it a lot. So when you're extremely tired, we wouldn't say I'm extremely tired. We'd just say, oh, I'm knackered. Or if you wanted to use some Cockney rhyming slang, you could say I'm cream crackered.
That's hilarious. So in the US, we might say, for example, that I'm beat or I'm exhausted. You probably would use that one as well, right?
I'm exhausted, we would use, yeah. I'm beat. You do hear it a bit more, but I think that one's a bit more American.
But as far as this tip, I'm not good with languages. I think it's like anything. Having a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset. A growth mindset is where you believe that through hard work and effort, you can improve. And a fixed mindset, you believe that natural talent is the only ability that really matters. It's kind of like they say there's a lot of evidence that shows you guys as parents, for example, if you tell your kids like, oh, congratulations, you're very talented. That's not very good feedback for kids. What you should say is like, congratulations, you worked really hard and you're rewarding that hard work rather than believing that talent is the path to success. And really, it's the same thing. Our brains are plastic. Our oral musculature, it's plastic too. You can work out, you can develop those muscles, you can develop those skills. You can put yourself in those experiences to have fun learning English, make it fun, natural, convenient, and really get to the point where you're living your English and you develop, even if it's not perfect, you can get to the point where you're communicating, you're understanding natives, and you're connecting to the world, which is real world fluency.
Mm-hmm. So this first one's a perfect example of what someone with a fixed mindset might say, I'm not good with languages. Someone with a growth mindset, as Justin mentioned, would probably say, I just need to work harder. So that said, I think we can jump into number 2, which we also hear all the time. What's that one?
I'm too embarrassed to speak.
Yeah, I think that this is maybe the bane of every English learner out there, right? Is feeling embarrassed to open your mouth.
The bane? What does that mean?
The bane is like the enemy or like the greatest challenge for someone.
It sounds kind of Shakespearean actually, right?
Yeah.
I think it sounds a little bit like a superhero or like supervillain kind of thing.
You might even say the bane of my life. Have you heard that? Do you guys say that?
The bane of my existence.
Oh, yeah, that's another one. Yeah.
I think that's a very common collocation, right? If you want to sound really smart, really poetic, maybe quoting Shakespeare, I don't know.
So what is the problem with this, Andrea? Why is this a bad excuse?
It's such a huge stumbling block. And I felt this as well. When I came to Barcelona and I was learning Spanish, there are so many moments where I felt embarrassed and I didn't want to speak and I would just be really quiet because I was so embarrassed and so afraid of making mistakes. But then it got to a point where I was like, I've lived here for a couple of years and I should be communicating. I should at least be trying. And it wasn't until then that I really then started to progress in my speaking because I was making mistakes. And I remember those mistakes and would reflect on them. And then that would enable me to improve my speaking and also to become more confident because I was speaking more. So it kind of has like a knock-on effect. The more you do it, you kind of roll with it. You get used to making the mistakes, so you're less embarrassed. And you become more confident with it too. And then you realize as well that people don't really care if you make mistakes.
And if people do, if people judge you, it's you sort of inoculate yourself against that. You realize that it might happen from time to time. It might happen that somebody might not understand you or they might not be so open to you. But at the same time, it's just like, well, you know what? Not everybody's going to vibe with you, ultimately.
There's a lot of vocabulary I want to point out for people. So, Andrea, you said it has like a knock-on effect. What does that mean?
Yeah, so it's like another way to describe it is like if something snowballs. So if you mm-hmm. think of a snowball starting off quite small, but then as it rolls, it gathers more snow and it gets bigger. So if something has a knock-on effect, it's just going to take you from one place to the next, and you have some sort of progression.
It's almost like exponential, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I've heard that expression before, but I actually didn't fully know the meaning. I couldn't have defined it, but I think I sort of intuitively understood it.
Totally. And Justin, you said that people can inoculate themselves against something. What does that mean?
Well, to inoculate yourself against something means to take a small dose of it, and then that ultimately heals you for the rest. So an inoculation, for example, like, I don't know if it would make sense to use this for like the coronavirus. You inoculate yourself against it with a vaccine, right? Mm-hmm. So a little bit of pain sometimes, or somebody rejecting you, you realize it's not bad. You know, it's not bad if somebody has a hard time understanding you. It's you just have to take it as feedback and roll with the punches. You have to take that as feedback and adapt to it, get better. That's what roll with the punches means.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask, but you already defined it. So I think that's pretty much exactly it, is that you have to kind of learn to laugh at yourself. I think so many people out there are scared that I'm going to open my mouth and people are going to laugh at my mistakes. And first of all, that doesn't tend to happen. I mean, if that does happen, then you're probably hanging out with the wrong people. But if it does happen, like, learn to laugh at yourself. I mean, sometimes when you make mistakes, it is quite funny. And I think if you learn to laugh with yourself, then, you know, it's like Justin said, you're going to be kind of building an armor for yourself for those mistakes. So definitely learn that mistakes are your best friend. They're kind of like guide you on your path to English fluency. And without them, you're really not going to be able to make any progress.
I like to think of it like a child learning to walk, ultimately. They're a good model because the child learning to walk, you know, they stand up and they fall down. They don't like take this in like a negative light, right? They just like get back up and they continue walking. And that's how they learn. If they, you know, sat down and said, I can't do it, I'm too embarrassed. Imagine they'd be like sitting down their entire lives, right?
Exactly. Wouldn't it be great if there was some way to understand real English without getting lost and without getting bored? Well, now there is. With our real-life native immersion course, we will take you on a 41-week real-life adventure of the English language, each week exploring a different topic connected to our goal to help you understand and use real native English and make it a permanent part of your life in a way that is fun, natural, and convenient. The best part is you can try it for free with our 3-part power learning series. We will send it to your email. Just go to reallifeglobal.com/pod, that's P-O-D, to sign up. Now, let's get back to today's podcast lesson. So, speaking of children, I think that really flows well into point number 3. What's that one, Andrea?
So it links really well because lots of people tend to say that adults don't learn languages very well. And I guess people say this a lot because they think about how children acquire languages, how maybe because they're immersed in the language from such a young age and they're just picking up these words. They're not speaking, but they're listening, and then that eventually leads to them speaking it. And people tend to think that this process is a lot faster, but I think it's a flawed way of thinking, because adults can of course pick up languages very well, and there are many advantages to learning a language as an adult.
Mm-hmm. Different studies have actually kind of like disproven that myth, because although children's minds, obviously, they're kind of like in a stage where they're acquiring the language and they're very much like sponges, they've shown that adults, because we're much better at problem solving and because we have kind of like those critical thinking abilities and self-awareness of our learning, that ultimately adults actually can pick up the language faster. I think the problem tends to be more that, you know, kids, they have all day long, you know, pretty much that they are immersed in the language, you know, at least with their parents, or if they're living in another country or something, they have all the time in the world to learn. And most of us that work and we have busy schedules and maybe you have family and other responsibilities, it's very hard to like find that time. So maybe if you're only spending like 30 minutes or an hour per day learning, then obviously your progress is going to be very slow when you compare yourself to a child who's, you know, 8, 10, 12 hours a day just being able to focus on, well, not even really focus, but kind of like play with the language. So that's why it's so important that you really make a lifestyle out of your learning. You're listening to a podcast, you know, everywhere you go, you're constantly filling your life with opportunities to listen to English and watch things in English at every opportunity.
Definitely kids do have the advantage of being able to become very native-like in their pronunciation, because their vocal cords haven't been formed until they're really like 14, 15 years old. So you see a lot of kids who've really like been immersed or spent a lot of time learning at that age, they get really great pronunciation. And a lot of people kind of mistake that for like the absolute fluency, when as adults, I think people kind of get embarrassed about the pronunciation sometimes. But coming back to the idea, if you're communicating, if you're using it for its purpose, if you can understand natives, if you can communicate with anybody, and you're using it for that real world fluency, then you're on a good path. So you shouldn't worry too much about that. But again, like Ethan was saying, like Andrew was saying, like as adults, we've become very goal oriented. We can mold our lives. We can really do so much to achieve our goals and use this to push other areas of our life forward with English. So it's definitely not, it's not a huge disadvantage.
Yeah. Maybe you'll struggle more to get that native accent if that's something that you want, than a child who, like Justin said, they kind of are still developing and stuff, so they kind of get that faster. But at least like in your ability to get to a very good level of the language and to be fluent, there's no barriers just because you're of your age. I've seen actually videos of, you know, people who, grandparents, you know, who are in their 70s and 80s who are learning languages, and because they have like a lot of time, they're retired and everything, they're able to get to a very high level. So I think like the only barrier is maybe your own fixed mindset in that case. And I think that rolls nicely also into number four, which I already kind of hinted at, but the excuse that people say a lot for English learning and for anything else, I don't have the time.
Yeah, so again, this is a huge excuse for so many things. And I think what it goes down to is that if you don't have time, it just means that you're not prioritizing it. So rather than you not having the time to learn English or to try new things, it's just that really you can't be bothered and there are other things that are taking precedent that are more important to you in that moment, and you're not really that bothered to progress in your English learning.
That's a really nice life hack that you just mentioned. I think if you can really program yourself to not say, to stop saying I don't have time, start talking about priorities. I don't prioritize this. It's not a priority. Then you kind of become responsible for your choices. So this is something I know when Ethan was coaching people one-on-one, I talked to some of those people and Ethan was always like, no excuses. No, it's not, I don't have time. It's not a priority. Ethan was very, very rigid about that.
Yeah. I think that that's a really important thing to like erase from your vocabulary. I don't have time. I mean, it's something that most of us have so habitualized to say this phrase. But when you really think about it, when you reflect on it, the whole thing, like, I don't have time, is it's like not really something real. And basically you have the time, you have your time basically belongs to you and everything, but really it's up to you to decide what do you want to prioritize in that time. And obviously there's certain things that you have to make a priority, like working, like eating, and like taking care of your children. But a lot of times when we do have the time, we're not making such good priorities. We're not making such good choices, or as Justin said, we're not really being responsible to be doing the best thing with that time. So both of us, Justin and I, read a book, I think it was maybe a year or two ago, called Essentialism, which if you're interested in this topic on how to be more essentialist, how to make better use of your time, that's a really great read.
And I would come back to this idea of, we always talk about, you know, make it fun and natural and convenient. Integrate it into your life. A really important part of living your English is to making it a natural part of your life. And so you can listen to podcasts, as we say, as you're, you know, shopping for Christmas presents or driving your car or walking the dog. So you can kill two birds with one stone. You can, you know, do two things and serve two things at the same time. And this is really important as well, to do other things that you would normally do in your language in English. So as you start doing that, you start replacing different areas of your life with English. You know, you make friends from around the world, you start traveling, you start watching TV shows in English, you start listening to music in English, and then the things you would naturally do start becoming, they start filling your time in English. So you don't need to take extra time to study, because it's what you naturally do, it's who you naturally are.
Mm-hmm. And I think that very nicely links to the next excuse, which people say a lot is, you know, I have to actually go to an English-speaking country and be studying there or working there or living there in order to be able to become fluent. A lot of people think that without going to live in the country, it's absolutely impossible. So what should people really do, Justin?
Well, I mean, this is kind of another big topic. I think it's true that going to an English-speaking country or going abroad in general is going to help you learn English and speak English more, but don't let that limit you if you're in your home country. I remember, for example, in high school, I studied Spanish, right? And I studied in college too. And really, I had no fluency. It was really hard. I wasn't that motivated. But when I traveled, I went to Mexico. I was immersed in the language and it was great. It sort of like took off the blindfold of my own language learning. Then when I went back to the United States, it was like I started listening to Spanish music. I started meeting people, speaking Spanish, and it was like part of my identity. It was really part of who I was. And so I didn't need to be in Mexico to be immersed. I immersed my life in it.
And what do you mean by take off the blindfold? What's a blindfold, first of all?
Well, blindfold is like something that you have in front of your eyes, covering your eyes, right? And so for me, it was like just realizing this whole other dimension of language, which I wasn't letting myself see. I wasn't letting myself experience before. But it really helped for me to go to that country, to go to Mexico, to kind of unlock that inside of me. But you don't need to do that. You meet lots of people who become very fluent from their home country because they've accessed the culture. And so when we have media and movies and all this stuff, like English is a global language, and there's so much media in English, there's so much culture, there's so much information, so you can unlock that dimension of English from where you are now.
Mm-hmm. And I think you said like there's a lot of people who are very able to be successful staying in their own country. There's a lot of people too who fail going abroad, whether they're living abroad. I've had students who lived in the United States and they could, you know, they had all the opportunities in the world to speak the language, but they still, because, you know, they're with family and stuff, and they just kind of get comfortable with other people from their home country or that speak their native language, and they're not really getting out of their shell. So you might go to another country, and that's not really going to be the silver bullet or the magical pill that's all of a sudden you're going to arrive in the United States and all of a sudden your mouth opens and you're speaking perfect American English. It's still, there's so much hard work that has to go into it, out of getting yourself out of your comfort zone, meeting people, making friends, and taking advantage of every single opportunity that you get to, you know, open your mouth and speak the language, to get over that shyness or that embarrassment that you have about speaking.
One quick story I'll tell about Ethan. Like when Ethan was in Brazil and we were starting Real Life English, like he was learning Portuguese. And I remember he met a friend on couch surfing, a French guy who lived in the city we were living in, Belo Horizonte. And Ethan started studying French. He started doing exchanges of English and French in Belo Horizonte. And he was already starting to speak French. We were living in Brazil. And it was amazing. He was learning Portuguese. He was learning French. And I was just really impressed by that.
During my very ambitious language learning days.
That's the thing. It really doesn't matter. That's just another
excuse, because there's so much that has to go into traveling to another country. You know, you have to be able to afford it, you have to have a plan. And when I first moved to Spain, in my first year, you know, I was picking things up just from my activities, but I wasn't speaking Spanish or like a native or anything. It depends what you come to the country to do, because I came to teach in an international school, and so I was paid to just speak in English all day, every day. I would come home, I would speak in English. You know, I was getting used to living in another country as well, so that could be an excuse, you might say. But for me, in the first year, it wasn't a priority, and it didn't, I didn't learn that much Spanish in my first year. I was just kind of taking it all in. And lots of people come here as well, and, you know, they can get by speaking in English. So they come to another country, but they don't then learn the language. And then when it's time to go somewhere else, they leave without knowing the language. And so, again, it goes back to whether or not it's a priority for you, and not making those excuses.
What does get by mean? You said people, they get by in English. What does that mean?
So you don't necessarily have to know the language of the place you're living in, because you can still encounter people that speak your language, or, you know, you can use some body language and gestures and things to get by, to be able to communicate what you need to do and to get things that you need to get done.
That's also a good response if somebody asks, you know, do you speak English? If you want to be humble, because it's really easy to say, yeah, I speak English, but we're all learning, the truth is. So you can say like, well, I get by, in a humble way to say like, you survive, you get by. Mm-hmm.
That's a great one. All right, so we just have a couple more before we finish. I think on what we were talking about, of, you know, having to go live in an English-speaking country, there's something very similar that people say all the time, is that, you know, I live in a small town, I can't meet any natives because, you know, there's no native speakers of English in my city and stuff. And this is something that if you're proactive, if you're better about going outside of your comfort zone, you can speak English with people just like yourself in your town who are learning English, maybe people who are in your English class. You can speak with people online as well, like joining some sort of English learning community. Like we have, for example, our Fluency Circle community, and there's, you know, thousands of people from all around the world, virtually every country, speaking to each other in English. So just because you don't have native speakers, this doesn't mean that you can't speak English. It's just kind of you're creating excuses for yourself, maybe because it makes it more convenient than actually having to step outside of your comfort zone.
Part of it is like actually cultivating your global tribe, right? So as you travel, as you meet people in different areas, you meet one friend, and then you meet another friend, and then you make another, and then eventually you have your network of friends from around the world who you can speak with. Maybe you'll visit them someday. And it's kind of the same thing. You're doing the same thing with your interests, right? Maybe there's a podcast you listen to, like our podcast, or another podcast or TV show. And so like little by little, you develop that network of experiences that you're constantly doing. And again, making it a part of who you are rather than where you go.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I think that's a perfect place to kind of springboard into the last two. And actually, we'll have another final two exclusively over on our Instagram at reallife.english. So you should totally go check those out after. But all of these have to do with different obstacles that you'll encounter. So the first one, what is it, Andrea?
So the first one is a lack of purpose. So you need to think about why you're learning English and use that as a source of inspiration. Because if you don't really have a purpose, you're not going to have a good direction, and you're not really going to be motivated or have those clear goals in mind. And that's really going to stop you from progressing and making any kind of progress.
And there are many different purposes that you can have. There's not just one purpose. I think there are really deep purposes and there are superficial purposes. Like there's this psychological theory called Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And it talks about, you know, the different levels of human needs. On a very basic level, we need, like, we have biological needs. We need to survive. We need to eat. We need to actually live in abundance. And then there's connection. And then there's like esteem, like actually feeling like you're successful. And then there's like self-realization on the highest level. So learning English, like you can learn English to get a better job. It's a great reason. It's a great why. But it doesn't really go deep enough because oftentimes when you make money, just earning money is not enough. You want to connect to people as well. You want to improve your achievement in life, not just your work, but in other areas that you're doing as well. And then to really become the best version of yourself, and that self-actualization. So on the highest level, learning English, if you think about it really deeply, and you, like Ethan, maybe you want to talk about the five whys activity that you suggested on a recent YouTube video, on the Global Citizen YouTube video. But really, when you ask yourself why are you learning on different levels, it always comes back to like this deeper sense of who you can be.
Yeah, maybe people can check out that video in our show notes or down in the description below, depending where you're watching this. We'll link that. And that's a really great exercise that I used to do with all of my students. But I think definitely what we were just talking about with having a global tribe, having, you know, people from around the world that kind of support your learning, I think when you actually start to have people that you're using the language with, this can add immense purpose to your learning. So maybe at first, it's like Justin said, you just want to get a better job. But when you're able to kind of like find those people who are on that journey, that same journey to English fluency with you, I think it all of a sudden kind of gives a sort of camaraderie that you will feel much more inspired to get past those really difficult times.
And the way I like to think about it is like English as the global language is the master key to unlocking a better life, the best version of yourself, and together, everybody is global citizens, because ultimately to recognize that no matter what divides us, what unites us is much greater as a global civilization, and even as a planet, even including like the ecosystems and all the life, really it's like we need each other to survive, and the future of humanity really depends on that. So in that really greater sense, that why is unity. It's global citizenship. It's something that is much greater than who you are in your individual life. And this is something you can bring back to your family too, to your friends. It's an awareness, a consciousness that we're all sort of like awakening to in the world right now.
So what is our very last point of the day, Andrea?
So the last one is having a lack of responsibility. So lots of people tend to think that if they pay someone to help them learn English, then that person is going to take responsibility for their acquisition of the language. And that's totally not true, because you can do that. You can pay someone, you can pay for classes, you can show up a couple of times a week or a few times a week to your lessons and then not do anything in between, and you're still not really going to progress much. You know, you have to really want it. You have to take responsibility for your journey, and you have to put in the time. And by paying someone to help you, okay, that's great if you can afford to do that and you have a teacher there to guide you, but you then also need to do all the follow-up work and do other things in your own time that's going to help you achieve your goals.
Part of that is like a lot of people sometimes they think that paying somebody or following a system or something, that they don't need to do the thinking, right? So if I'm following the system, then it's going to naturally take care of itself. And in some sense, there's truth to that, but you need to really be reflective about your learning process and understand how you learn best. Not every system is going to succeed for you. And a lot of systems are just garbage. So really, it's important for you to take responsibility for your own learning. Don't give your authority as your own, the owner of your own learning process to somebody else. Be it an exchange program or a school or a teacher or us. You need to take it into your own hands, be reflective and figure out what works best for you.
Definitely. I think a lot of people get a teacher. I've had a lot of students like this who they think it's just like you're paying this person, they'll make you fluent. But ultimately, a teacher, they're more showing you the way, but you have to walk it yourself. You have to do that hard work that's involved in everything. And otherwise, you know, you're always just going to kind of like fall on your face in trying to achieve that goal, you know, fluency. And I think like another thing that you kind of reminded me of here, Justin, is like The Alchemist, that a lot of people, which is a book, a very famous book by Paulo Coelho. And a lot of people kind of have this idea, you know, that there's some point that they're going to get to. And with English learners, a lot of time, like, I'm going to get to this point where I'm fluent and I will never be scared of speaking anymore. I'll be able to speak just like a native and I'll never make mistakes. But when you think like that, it's kind of like you're missing the point, first of all, because, you know, you're going to be learning your entire life. And even us as natives, there's still things that we can learn. There's still new words and new expressions and everything. And we still make mistakes sometimes when we're speaking quickly and we're not really thinking about it. And I think also if you're too focused maybe just on that end point or that ideal achievement, then you're going to kind of miss out on the journey.
It's a journey, not a destination, right?
Exactly. So that said, we have two more obstacles that most English learners tend to run into that will prevent them from kind of reaching this goal of English fluency. But if you want to hear about those, then you're going to have to head over to our Instagram at reallife.english. And I think that those will be very helpful for you as well, because you want to avoid those and you want to feel successful on your journey.
Okay, so before we end today, we want to challenge you to do one thing to really help fortify all this learning you've been going through today. And I would recommend this on any process, any learning experience that really impacts you. So take just some time, take at least 5 minutes, but take 15 minutes if you can, to sit down, grab a piece of paper and do a brainstorm. And maybe you can go back through these, you can check the show notes out to see the different points we made, and just write down on the paper, why do you want to learn English? And just go deeper, ask yourself 5 times, like, why are you learning English? And then you get one answer, go deeper, why are you learning English? And then from there, write down notes from everything we talked about today. How can you cultivate a pleasure for learning English? How can you make it a part of your life? How can you make it something that is much more successful than where you're at now?
I think doing this kind of thing, journaling, can be immensely helpful, because it sort of opens up, it awakens that curiosity that you have within, and that reflectiveness can really help you to overcome these obstacles. It can help you to identify kind of where those roadblocks are. So that can be an immensely helpful habit if you haven't cultivated that already.
And if you're watching this on YouTube, or even if you're listening, go to the YouTube video and leave it under the comments, just a part of your answer of why you're learning English. We would love to read it, comment it, and give a heart on there.
Awesome. So that said, we've had a lot of fun talking about this with you. We hope that it's been helpful, and we'll see you next week on the Real Life English Podcast. 1, 2, 3.
Aww, yeah.
Hey again, I hope you enjoyed today's lesson. Don't be a stranger. You can find all the notes, like vocabulary, links, and more for this lesson on our blog at reallifeglobal.com. And connect with us and on Instagram at reallife.english for even more fun English recommendations. Do you want to continue your learning and get confident, fluent English? Then I have a couple great recommendations for you. First of all, check out our YouTube channel, Learn English with TV Series, where you can have fun learning to understand fast-speaking natives with your favorite movies, series, and more without getting lost, without missing the jokes, and without subtitles. Second, if you like our podcast, then our Real Life Native Immersion course is perfect for you. It is the next best thing to studying abroad in an English-speaking country. Try it for free with our 3-part Power Learning Series. Just go to reallifeglobal.com/pod to sign up. Finally, if you are enjoying our podcast, then please assist us in helping more people go beyond the classroom and live their English. You can do this by sending a link to this podcast to a friend, or by leaving us a 5-star review wherever you are listening. We might even shout you out on the podcast. Stay healthy and safe, and I look forward to seeing you next week. Aw, yeah.